We're looking at Northwestern Mutual's effort to connect tech entrepreneurs who are Black to venture capital. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The Milwaukee-based insurer launched a national startup accelerator and allocated $20 million exclusively for Black-founded startups. What effect will the seed money have for underserved communities and to increase diversity in tech? Are you a person of color trying to get your startup launched? What are the barriers? Have you found investors and have access to resources that help, like intellectual property help or mentorship? 800-642-1234 to join in. Abeem Kolawale is Vice President of Digital Innovation at Northwestern Mutual. He chairs the investment committee for the Cream City Venture Capital Fund, which is one of Northwestern Mutual's funds focused on supporting startups in southeastern Wisconsin. Abeem, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning. What is it like today being a Black entrepreneur who has an idea, who's trying to launch an idea?
Thank you for that question. It's quite challenging. We know that the stats indicate that Black founders who are interested in advancing their business ideas have less than 1% access to venture capital funding. And as such, at Northwestern Mutual, on the heels of George Floyd, we wanted to make sure we were committed to supporting Black founders and provided them with access to capital by setting aside $20 million from our Northwestern Mutual Futures Ventures to be able to enable Black founders to have an equal footing and thereby help with respect to equity when it comes to Black businesses.
Why $20 million? And is this just a start?
This is just a start, actually. We wanted to make sure that we set aside a sizable amount of funding over the next couple of years and see exactly the impact we're able to make with that set-aside funding. To date, we've gotten a fair amount of applications already, which is a great, great sign. And for the accelerator program, we actually have over 400 applications already.
Wow.
For the cohort that's meant to begin in March.
So you've had quite a bit of reception. There is an appetite out there. Do you anticipate you're going to get some really good startup ideas that otherwise wouldn't have been there if you hadn't put out this type of ask and this type of money?
We believe so. I mean, to your point, 400 applications indicates that there's a tremendous amount of appetite. And we believe that, but for this type of set aside, the systemic problems would have continued, and we expect to see even more appetite for the next cohort program that we're going to start in the fall.
People of color are often underbanked or unbanked. You know, getting a banker to give your business a new loan, that is a huge barrier, huge challenge. How should banks be stepping up at this point?
I think banks and all other community partners really need to evaluate the challenges based on systemic racism and ensure that we are creating opportunities for equal footing for banks, extension of loans, the enablement of affordable housing. I think all community corporations can come together to really think about the significant impacts that can be made, not only domestically within their communities, but also nationally.
And they might say to you, well, we're negotiating risk. We need to assess our exposure, our risk. What do you say to that?
Well, all banks need to continue to think about their underwriting standards. But when we think about the systemic racism and the fact that when we think about loans, historically, Blacks and African Americans did not have the same kind of access. And this is a time to really be forethinking and to think about how banks, for instance, and other community partners can rethink their policies to make sure that we are advancing racial equity with some degree of impact.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Abeem Kolawale, who is Vice President of Digital Innovation at Northwestern Mutual. We're talking about the new effort to invest in high-growth startups founded by Black entrepreneurs. Have you started a business recently, or maybe in the last few years, did you have access to venture capital? How did seed money help you in the early stages? Join in at 800-642-1234. Abeem, in these applications you're getting in, what kind of startup ideas, what kind of businesses are eligible for the investment funding?
That's a very good question, Kate. We look for businesses that have some degree of strategic alignment with Northwestern Mutual. In particular, we look at businesses that are involved in four areas. Businesses that are involved in anticipating and building for consumers' changing preferences, reimagining the client experience, the digital health revolution, and transformational analytics and technologies. So we very much invite any businesses that have business ideas focused in these areas to please get involved and submit applications. It's a very, very exciting time, and we're very excited to be involved in this.
Could you give some examples for us of what might fall under that umbrella?
Yes. We know that consumers' changing experiences are rapidly evolving. And as a financial security company, we're very interested in businesses, as an example, that might have some financial technology capabilities that really will help to accelerate and transform the experience that we as consumers have.
So your company is also making a larger commitment to diversity and inclusion, and you have this sustained action for racial equity task force.
Correct.
What are you working through on this task force?
Yeah, thanks for that opportunity. The company has been committed to diversity and inclusion for quite some time now. But on the heels of the unfortunate passing of George Floyd, CEO John Schlifske decided to put together a task force called the Sustained Action for Racial Equity. And he was quite emphatic around the word sustained to make sure that our policies and the actions have sustained impact. There are four work streams within the Sustained Action for Racial Equity Task Force, involving over 60 leaders within the company. The work streams are as follows. We focus on culture of inclusion and respect. We want to make sure we focus also on underrepresented talent within the company. My work stream that I'm co-leading is the business innovation and financial security work stream. And the last of the work streams is the partnerships and community work stream. We're very, very excited about the fact that we're trying to do our part to address systemic racism through those four work streams.
How do you measure whether you make progress?
There are various ways of measuring progress. Taking talent, for instance, one of the things that we're thinking about is how we make sure that we recruit more Black and African Americans into the company, we support their growth, and also enable such people to get promoted.
How do you see that in the confines of where you're headquartered in Milwaukee, in the community that is surrounding Northwestern Mutual?
We have always been a very, very impactful member of the community, and we recognize that Milwaukee has some unique challenges. And as a company that has a local presence here, we're very, very committed, and we continue, based related to the Sustained Action for Racial Equity, we continue to think about how we can ensure that this is a very thriving community, while also thinking about what we may do nationally since we have clients across the nation.
We're talking with Abeem Kolawale, who is Northwestern Mutual's Vice President of Digital Innovation. We're discussing a venture capital fund expressly for Black-founded startups and how Northwestern Mutual is taking steps in this area to be more inclusive. Are you getting a business off the ground in Wisconsin? How difficult is it to get seed money? Are you a Black entrepreneur? What do you need most in establishing your startup? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute with Abeem Kolawale here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing a new investment by Northwestern Mutual to put $20 million into Black-founded startups, and they say this is just the beginning. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. One statistic out there, Black founders receive roughly 1% of venture capital funding in America, cited there in Harvard Business Review and elsewhere. Are you a Black entrepreneur? Who has helped fund your business startup? Who have your mentors been to help get your business off the ground? And what do you want to say about pitching an idea as a person of color looking out at a white boardroom? 800-642-1234. We have Abeem Kolawale, who leads digital innovation at Northwestern Mutual, chairs its investment committee for its Cream City Venture Capital Fund, and he stays with us. Abeem, what about the generator that is also in partnership with this investment fund? Tell us about the Black Founder Accelerator program.
Yeah, I appreciate the question, Kate. We wanted to make sure that we had an ecosystem approach. It's one thing to have the $20 million set aside, but we recognized that it's also very important to enable Black founders to have an immersive experience in a program like the Accelerator program in partnership with Generator. That program is a 12-week program. We have two cohorts in every given year, and in each cohort we expect to have five Black businesses that would receive some funding, but also the kinds of support and immersive experience over 12 weeks that enables graduates of that programs to be in great shape to then apply for follow-on funding. So we're looking at this as an ecosystem approach that really enables broad support for Black and African American founders in addition to access to capital.
How is the Cream City Labs involved in this and the Cream City Venture Capital Fund?
The Cream City Venture Capital Fund is separate from it's a separate endeavor, but nonetheless, another endeavor, again, to your point earlier on, focused on southeastern Wisconsin and focused on opportunities to support underrepresented businesses, but also other businesses that may not necessarily fit in those four categories that I mentioned previously. So Cream City Venture Capital does not have a restriction with respect to those four categories I mentioned.
Okay.
It's really for any business, any startup business in the South Wisconsin, southeastern Wisconsin area.
When the group goes through the generator program, what are some things that they're learning in these 12 weeks?
They're learning a variety of things, depending again on how on the business model. But I would expect that whether it's marketing, whether it's product design, whatever the challenge is that the particular business may be facing, maybe it's pressure testing the business model again, the immersive program is designed to really help you think about your business model. Oftentimes, the businesses that would be applying into that program are pre-revenue and pre-product. So there could be a variety of business challenges, but the program is really designed to help you think about how you may get to revenue, think about what your products are, and how you may acquire customers, as an example, and market to be able to ensure that you have good product market fit.
What would be a typical investment with seed money for one of these entrepreneurs? What type of funds do they need to get started?
I would expect that coming out of the Accelerator program, an investor would be looking at anywhere in the range of $500,000 to $1 million, depending again on their business model and what they need to sustain their operations and move on to the next round of financing. We in Office Mutual would often invest in the seed round through the Series B round up to about $5 million. So again, it depends on what the investor may be looking at. But one would expect that they would be looking at anything from $500,000 and up to really help to ramp up their operations.
Do you find that entrepreneurs are going it alone, or do they often have partners in their vision or people around them who are also putting in the grueling hours of work to get this business off the ground?
We have generally found that founders would have partners. You know, again, it depends on the nature of the business model, but oftentimes you have different types of expertise that founders bring to bear. So we would find sometimes individual founders, but oftentimes you have co-founders, and you may have a CEO founder, but has a supporting cast, again, to sort of round out the expertise. And investors, oftentimes, would look at the team, what kind of a team you have to create the confidence that you are really thinking about all aspects of your business and making sure you have the right expertise to bring to bear.
We're talking with Abeem Kolawale, who is Vice President of Digital Innovation at Northwestern Mutual. We're looking at efforts to help Black entrepreneurs get access to startup capital and why some people of color are often locked out. What questions do you have about Northwestern Mutual's venture capital program? Are you interested in how their startup accelerator works? Have you ever participated in an accelerator program? What was it like? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Abeem, in the hundreds of applications that have started flowing in, what percentage are from Wisconsin? Is there a Wisconsin representation?
That's a good question. I believe it's Wisconsin representation. Unfortunately, I don't know what the breakdown percentage-wise is. Applications are still coming in, actually. But we're hearing that we're definitely getting a broad diversity of applications, which is very, very heartening. That the demand is certainly out there, and people are very encouraged by the program. But I just don't have the breakdown now relative to national footprint versus applications from the Wisconsin area.
Abeem, the vast majority of venture capitalists in Silicon Valley are white and they're men, and so that is where the funding has gone. How do you change the system?
The system can be changed little by little, and I think the step we're taking is a huge step to signal the disparity in terms of access to capital. But beyond the access to capital, like I said, we have the Accelerator program, which is also a nice wraparound. But a third aspect of that is Northwest Mutual Futures Ventures now has a venture platform, which is designed beyond, again, the capital to create exposure and enable, create access, I would say, for Black founders to the contacts and connections. And these are initial steps to begin to level the playing field. It will take a while, but we're very excited that between the set-aside funding, the Accelerator program, and the venture platform that creates access to the networks, that we begin to hopefully even the level playing field. It certainly will take a while because we talked about the years of systemic racism and inequality as it relates to success and access to capital.
Is there enough access to capital, enough venture capital and angel investors outside of Silicon Valley, outside of San Francisco, outside of New York? What is it like for seed money here in the heartland?
In terms of funding that's focused on Black founders, I don't think there's enough. Obviously, I'm heartened to know that over the last year, I have seen a lot more spring up, and I'm hoping that that continues to grow because certainly one company can't do it alone. So I'm heartened, and I've heard a fair amount of announcements thus far, and we expect to be able to collaborate with some of those other funds. Long story short, I expected it to be a proliferation over the next couple of years, but this is just the beginning.
Since the death of George Floyd, how have you seen Northwestern Mutual change?
Great question. It started off with our CEO who put together this task force, but even before the task force, we had had a diversity and inclusion focus, but recognized that that was not enough. And this is something that is being led by the CEO himself. So it speaks to the fact that we need to have this organic growth within Northwest Mutual and resurgence of a focus on diversity and inclusion across the board. So all leaders are being held accountable. We're very intentional about creating the right environment, the right culture that's conducive for all people to make sure we're able to bring our best selves to work. So I'm very excited about the groundswell, the additional groundswell on the heels of the diversity and inclusion efforts. And the 60 leaders who are at the table helping to drive the task force are very excited, very committed, and I'm expecting to see more sustained results over the next couple of years. As an African-American executive myself at the company, I can tell you that I am convicted that we are on the right path. We have the right momentum. We have the right leadership. And our employees are looking to see exactly what we're doing. And I'm very sure that over the next couple of years, we will have some additional data points, proof points, to show the degree of success and results that we're achieving.
Yeah, in the last couple seconds here, what type of success do you hope to see out of this $20 million investment in Black-founded startups?
The ideal vision would be to run out of funding and to have to set aside additional funding, to be honest. That's the kind of success I expect. But again, beyond the funding is to also make sure we're closing the gaps as it relates to access to connections to a network and make sure that we're beginning to level the playing field. That would be very, very exciting. And I look forward to a day when all this will be behind us.
Abeem, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kate. Very much appreciated.
Abeem Kolawale is Vice President for Digital Innovation at Northwestern Mutual. He chairs the investment committee for its Cream City Venture Capital Fund. Ahead this hour, we have the Deputy Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Health Services as we ask why the vaccine rollout is slow and who is eligible next. Your questions on vaccine distribution, 800-642-1234. Stay with us. News update is next on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it is time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Brad Kohlberg remembering baseball legend Hank Aaron and his time with two baseball teams in Wisconsin.
Baseball legend Hank Aaron died late last week at 86 years old. He had close ties to Wisconsin and its people, including my dad. Hank Aaron won the World Series with the Milwaukee Braves in 1957 when my dad was 7 years old. Later, my dad almost caught a foul ball off Aaron's bat at a game. He says Hammer and Hank's numerous home runs were sometimes line drive missiles that seemed to still be gaining altitude as they reached the bleachers. Aaron went on to break Babe Ruth's all-time home run record in 1974 after the Braves moved from Milwaukee to Atlanta.
One ball and no strikes. Aaron waiting, the outfield deep and straight away. Fastball is a high drive into deep left center field. Buckner goes back to the fence. It is gone. What a marvelous moment for the country and the world. A black man is getting a standing ovation in the deep south for breaking a record of an all-time baseball idol.
Aaron received a mountain of hate mail and even death threats as he approached the milestone. But in a 2012 speech at Marquette University, Aaron talked about staying focused through adversity.
There were many times when I wanted to give up, but I kept going and I learned that if you want something bad enough, you have to make the necessary sacrifices to get it.
He spent the last two seasons of his career with the Milwaukee Brewers and hit his last home run at Milwaukee County Stadium. Hank Aaron was thankful for his time in Wisconsin.
A little town called Eau Claire in the city of Milwaukee helped to shape my dreams and my life.
For more on Aaron's time in that little town called Eau Claire, here's contributor Dean Robbins.
Hank Aaron set lifetime records for home runs and runs batted in, among other mind-boggling feats. He and Babe Ruth are the only two players who rate their own rooms in the Baseball Hall of Fame. You might not know that Hank started his career in another Wisconsin city, Eau Claire. After signing him in 1952, the Braves sent the 18-year-old to the Eau Claire Bears, their Class C farm team. As a kid who'd grown up in Mobile, Alabama, Hank was unprepared for this northern town, and Eau Claire was just as unprepared for Hank. But a funny thing happened in the summer of 1952. Eau Claire and Hank Aaron got along. White families opened their doors to Hank. He got multiple invitations to dinner. One family basically adopted him. Like a lot of folks in town, they were big supporters of the Bears, and they felt real affection for the shy kid who began tearing up the Northern League on his way to a Rookie of the Year award. The family had a teenage daughter, and she and Hank developed a special friendship. The two of them used to sit on the porch holding hands, and the amazing thing is that nobody made a big deal about it. Of course, they didn't flaunt their relationship in public. The city probably wasn't ready to go that far. Still, as Hank said later, I was treated as fair as could be in Eau Claire. Compare this to the treatment he got on his next minor league team in the Deep South. Instead of invitations to dinner, he got slurs and death threats. As a black player, he wasn't allowed to share a dressing room with his white teammates, so he had to suit up for games at his segregated hotel. and yet he rose above it all with quiet dignity, just as he did throughout his major league career. To this day, Hank Aaron and Eau Claire get along splendidly. He's been back to visit several times, most notably in 1994, when the city dedicated a statue of him. Hammer and Hank was blown away by the reception he got from thousands of adoring fans. As he put it, "A lot of things happened to me in my 23 years as a ballplayer, but nothing touched me more than that day in Eau Claire." Eau Claire natives are clearly proud of the big star who began his career in their small city. They should also be proud of themselves for treating the star-to-be with respect.
Dean Robbins is a journalist and author based in Madison. Special thanks to WPR reporter Rob Menser, who contributed to this story on Hank Aaron, who passed away last week. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Brad Kohlberg.
And now we turn to COVID vaccine rollout in Wisconsin. Teachers, childcare workers, grocery store employees, group home residents are among the next wave of people eligible for a vaccine beginning March 1st. But that date, it's a moving target based on the federal allotment. According to DHS, Department of Health Services, Wisconsin has roughly 1,300 authorized vaccine providers statewide. Have you been vaccinated? What was it like to get an appointment? Share your experience, what you need to know, 800-642-1234. Julie Wilms-Van Dyke is Deputy Secretary of DHS. Deputy Secretary Wilms-Van Dyke, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Great to be with you this morning.
Explain where we are at. How many Wisconsinites are eligible right now to receive vaccines? And at this point, how many have?
Well, we have a number of groups, as you have recognized here, that are currently eligible for vaccine. And if you look at all of those groups put together, it's about 2 million people. And as of yesterday, we had vaccinated 362,803. So that's a lot more people than we had on December 14th when we gave our first vaccine, but still a lot of people in the currently eligible groups that we need more vaccine for. And of course, we are eager as anybody to get to opening up vaccine for everybody, but it is completely dependent on that supply.
Okay, so before we talk about the tier that is known as 1B, let's look at the 1A group, the first people to get vaccinated. Where are you at with completing the 1A phase?
So 1A, again, is those frontline healthcare workers, long-term care residents and staff, EMS workers, police and fire. And we're probably about halfway to maybe getting close to two-thirds of the way through that group.
When you look at this 1B tier group, who is in this group and who is not in this group?
So we started 1B a bit early with people age 65 and older. Just a reminder, that is the group that is most at risk for COVID disease and severe sequelae of COVID disease. Over 92% of the deaths in our state have been in that population. In addition, we've added educators, and that includes everyone from early childhood and daycare providers through K-12 staff through faculty and staff who have direct contact with students in our higher education system. We've added individuals enrolled in Medicaid long-term care programs. We've added a whole group of public-facing essential workers. This includes critical workers like 911 operators, our utility and communications infrastructure, public transit infrastructure, everyone along our food supply chain, so from farmers to food processors, to grocery store workers and people who work in hunger relief programs, and then non-frontline healthcare personnel, the people who keep our healthcare system going, like cleaning people and IT people and people who contribute to the supply chain. And then finally, people in congregate living settings, where we also know spread of the disease is really spreads like wildfire and are at risk.
Yeah, there is tension around whether prison inmates should be next in line here. Why are people who are incarcerated in the 1B group?
So when we look at congregate living settings, prisons are one of the most clear congregate living settings. It's a place where it's very difficult to isolate and quarantine people because of the setup in prisons. We know there has been extensive spread of the disease in prisons. And so the committee, as they looked at congregate settings, said the principles that lead you to saying congregate settings should be included because of the risk of disease are clearly present in prisons. I think the other thing to remember is prisons are part of your community, and it's not like the disease stops at the prison walls. When an outbreak happens in a prison, it spreads to the people who work there, who take it home, and it spreads to others in the community. So protecting people in prison is also protecting people in the community.
We've been hearing this week from Wisconsinites who are just getting busy signals, can't get through to get an appointment, especially seniors. What do you tell people who can't get through to get an appointment?
So what I think is really important for people to hear is we just added, when we added seniors, that's a group of over 700,000 people, and we're receiving about 70,000 first doses of vaccine a week. So when you do the math there, that would say just doing the seniors is going to take us 10 weeks to get through this process. It's not because we want you to wait or be on that phone with that busy signal. It's just because that's how much vaccine there is coming into our state from the federal government. So patience, if you have skills on the internet or have family with skills on the internet, many of our healthcare systems have set up systems for waiting lists. Many of our healthcare systems are also saying, we'll reach out to you. They know who folks are in their older adult population and are using different mechanisms to set appointment times and reaching out to their patients. You will get there. It just might take a little bit of time.
Let's bring in Meg now in Appleton. Hi, Meg. What is your circumstance?
I have a son who is in a group home, and he is among the most vulnerable, and there are many people who are in group homes and nursing homes that have not been vaccinated. And I know they have a partnership with the state health department, has a partnership with Walgreens and CVS. It's obviously not working because so many of the people who are the most vulnerable are not getting their vaccines, and it is a shame, and it borders on criminal. It is discriminatory.
Deputy Secretary, Meg, thank you. Deputy Secretary, where is the breakdown there? What can you say?
So the partnership with CVS and Walgreens began with skilled nursing facilities, and those are what we commonly call nursing homes. And that portion of the program has been completed. The portion of the program that Meg is referring to, which is assisted living facilities, which are group homes and community-based residential facilities, many of our memory care centers across the state are in that category, and as Meg says, group homes for other people who need care. That program started last week. This, again, is about vaccine supply. So those facilities are in process with CVS and Walgreens. There were 380 nursing homes. There are over 4,300 group homes or assisted living facilities. And so a lot more places to get to. CVS and Walgreens have also asked for assistance. And so we are beginning to also assign some of those facilities to pharmacies and to local health departments across the state and we are moving into that portion of vaccination as we speak.
Scaling up very quickly. Discussing COVID vaccine rollout in Wisconsin with DHS Deputy Secretary Julie Wilms Van Dyke. Are you eligible for the COVID vaccine? Do you know where to get it? What do you want to ask the DHS Deputy Secretary? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with DHS Deputy Secretary Julie Wilms Van Dyke. We're discussing the phases of giving out COVID vaccines and the allotment from the federal government. More than 362,000 vaccines have been administered in Wisconsin. And the DHS Deputy Secretary is with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's go to Tim now in Eau Claire with a question. Hi, Tim.
Hello. I'm a frontline worker with multiple rheumatological issues and a heart attack survivor, but I do not fit into the over 65 group. I do go into people's homes to fix television and the internet as an over 60, you know, that many of those customers are over 65. I'm wondering if you had an educated guess as to which part of the rollout I might be in.
Tim, thanks. Deputy Secretary.
So utility and communications infrastructure workers, including internet and telecommunications workers, will be part of the new group that we just approved, Tim. So based on what you said, it sounds like you're part of that group. We that new group is estimated to begin around March 1st. We're not starting it right now because of the issues around vaccine supply that I just recommended. And if we had everyone in that group start now, the waiting time on the phone lines and the time for vaccine appointments would be even longer. But my estimate is around March 1st, again, dependent on vaccine supply from the federal government. We're hopeful that will increase. We're hopeful that perhaps a new vaccine will be approved in the next month or so, which will obviously increase supply. And so if those things happen, it could be a little earlier. If vaccine supply slows, it could be a little later.
Let's bring in Alan now in Madison. Hi, Alan. Go ahead.
I appreciate that a lot of work has gone into distributing the vaccine in Wisconsin and other states. But it seems like a lot of the conversation has focused on the limitations of supply from the federal government. But I did just want to ask, from the statistics I can find, about 600,000 vaccine doses have been distributed to the state, but only a little over half of those have actually been, distributed or injected into arms, administered. And so, you know, what are some of the factors that have led to that number being relatively low? We rank 34th out of the 50 states. And what are some of the plans to try to get that number higher?
That's a great question. So part of the answer to that is the vaccines that are wrapped up in the pharmacy program for long-term care, as I said. And one of the things that we're doing is working very closely with CVS and Walgreens to see actually how many of those vaccines do they actually need. And if they don't need all of them, can we pull some of them back and get them into our local system here in Wisconsin to vaccinate? A second thing we're doing is working closely with our providers around making sure that they're getting vaccine in arms, that they're not sitting on stockpiles of vaccine. I don't think that's the case in many situations, but one of the reasons we expanded to the 65-plus group was to make sure that there was a big enough population for any vaccinator to be vaccinating. What we saw a few weeks ago is some of our vaccinators were saying, we've got vaccine, but we've taken care of all the frontline healthcare workers in our community, and we don't know who else to vaccinate. So the decision to add a big group like people who are 65 plus is also in service to getting our vaccine moving even faster. The last thing I would say is at any given time, when you look at those numbers, there is a whole bunch of vaccine that is actually in the process of moving and in transit. And so from the time we order it and it gets to the vaccinator and gets in someone's arms, that's about a 7 to 10 day process. So that's where you'll also see some of that difference between numbers allocated, ordered, and in arms.
Alan, thank you for those questions. We have roughly 1,300 authorized vaccinators. Do we need more?
Well, I think we're in really good shape, and we welcome more as we move forward. One of the reasons we have far more vaccinators than most other states. Many other states have chosen to primarily deliver vaccine through big mega community vaccination clinics. And we do plan to expand the use of that kind of community-based vaccination clinic as vaccine supply increases. But while vaccine supply is still fairly limited, we think people seek vaccine through their normal mechanisms, like they get a flu vaccine, through their local physician, through their local pharmacy, through their local health department, or through their employer. And so that's who our 1,300 vaccinators are, and we want to build on the really good healthcare and delivery system we have in Wisconsin, and we think those 1,300 actually, as of yesterday, up to 1,500 vaccinators will serve us very well.
We're talking with Julie Willems-Van Dyke, telling us about the COVID vaccine rollout in our state. She's Deputy Secretary of DHS. Let's bring in Susan now in Racine. Hi, Susan. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. Two questions. My first one is, the federal guidelines include in people under 65 who are high risk with the over 65 group, but the Wisconsin Human Services, when they chose their guideline, did not include the high-risk individuals under 64. I wondered why that was, if my information is correct, of course. And my second question is, do we know how long these vaccinations last in terms of how long they'll protect you? Thanks.
Susan, thank you. And we have less than a minute. Go ahead.
All right. We definitely want to get to people under 65 with higher risk conditions. But the factors that we used really focused on who is at highest risk of both exposure and mortality or death related to the disease. And that's why the populations we've chosen have been selected. And in terms of how long the vaccines will last, we will have to study that and follow that as we go. It is possible down the road we'll need boosters for COVID-19 vaccines or even an annual vaccine similar to flu vaccine. But that is something yet to be determined as we continue to study this and follow this.
Do you expect supply to improve from the federal government? And if so, when?
I expect it to improve. When is a big question. And I suspect that without the addition of a new vaccine, it's going to be later this spring, early summer.
Deputy Secretary, thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Julie Willems-Van Dyke, Deputy Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Just ahead, we get a closer look at the women who are making waves in Congress. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.